Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show.
He came from somewhere back in how long ago. The sound of a fool don't see, trying hard to recreate what had yet to be created.
And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi everyone, I'm Gary Noel. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to have a very empowering and very positive hour. We're going to talk about how diet and nutrition have profound effects on your gut bacteria, what I call the microbiome. This is from George Washington University, published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrition Reviews, about how what you eat and the quality of that diet can impact your metabolic, hormonal, and neurological processes. In effect, helps you get healthy or causes disease. Then a special in-depth investigative report about the coronavirus. Richard Gale and I have spent a lot of time looking at all the sciences from around the world, and we believe that there are lessons we can learn, both from the constructive point of view, let's say from Japan, and from South Korea, and Taiwan, and even China, that we don't seem to be focused upon in the United States for whatever reason. Also today, we're going to go to our talkback segment where you have an opportunity to call in and share your comments and points of view on particular issues right now. And we're going to continue one more day talking about the phenomena of having a very large aging population, and let's say aging now from 50 on. And at that time, you're looking at the largest single segment of the population, larger than the baby boomers when you take it at that age. You're talking about nearly 100 million people, at least 83 million baby boomers. Why aren't they organized? Why aren't they joining together to demand that they be treated with the dignity and respect and the resources that they require and should be given as they go into the final stages of their life? Why aren't we looking at ways of rejuvenating ourselves? Do we not believe we can turn back the time in our life, the aging process? Well, this is what I'd like for you to call in and share your points of view. Our talkback number, our voicemail, is 862-800-6805. Again, call us and give us your opinion. I respect your opinion. 862-800-6805. Now, almost everyone who's called in has been themselves a senior. We're not restricting who calls in. Anybody can call in and give their perspective. The more perspectives we have on any issue, the better we are. And yet today, we're censoring on every issue, every voice that some institutional factor is threatened by. Hence, we don't have an open and honest dialogue on the health and safety of vaccines, on medications, on our diet, on electromagnetic frequencies and 5G. So we are limited in the information we get, and many of the people who normally are considered policymakers and opinion leaders, they're wrong, out and out wrong, and yet people continue to go to them like the New York Times or CNN as a trusted source. So we trust you. Give us a call, 862-800-6805. So we're going to hear from you today and a special in-depth investigative report with the latest on how to protect yourself from the coronavirus and a more realistic assessment. I believe that we have been put into panic mode for political reasons. Yes, the coronavirus exists. Yes, it is deadly. No, we do not have the evidence at this time that it was genetically engineered. Yes, Bill Gates did file, and we have a copy of the patent on the coronavirus, but that doesn't mean that he was intending anything with that would be putting people in harm's way. A lot of organizations, individuals, foundations, and scientists own patents on these viruses because they're doing research on them, and some for benevolent reasons. So there's just too much conspiratorial nonsense out there. We take the time as scholars to review all the scientific data and then give you the best that we can of what we can and should be focused upon. You're going to get that today. Also today, we have we have an interesting conversation. The coronavirus is the shock. Dictatorship is the doctrine. This is from Real News Media, and they're a very good source. And this is a top investigative journalist who is Israeli, lived in Israel, and he's being interviewed about what the Israelis, Netanyahu's Likud party, is doing to invade the privacy of every citizen, and so they can, quote, better understand who's got the virus. Does anyone believe that? My goodness, you're opening the door to absolute totalitarianism. So we believe you should hear this. Also, when was last time the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, the Boston Herald, the Miami Herald, the Chicago Sun Tribune, when was last time any of these respected publications or any of the mainstream media, NBC, CBS, Fox, MSNBC, when was last time any of them talked about, we have a reporter on the ground in Gaza, in the West Bank? You're talking about over 4 million people living in, for all intents and purposes, irrespective of what you believe is they should be there or they shouldn't be there. It's a gulag. It's a concentration camp of concentrating a high number of people in an environment with no freedoms. Now, the first cases of coronavirus have been reported. They have no medical facilities to treat this. They have not the medicines. Everything is jerry-rigged, meaning everything is thrown together with what they have. Now, what if this becomes rampant? You're going to see a massive amount of infections and deaths because these people are already malnourished, drinking toxic water, limited in their caloric intake, and yet the world seems not to care for about 4 to 5 million people who are in harm's way. Now, again, whether you agree upon Zionism or disagree, that's your business. I'm not here to advocate what you should believe in. I'm merely here to report on those who have no voice. Lewis Hill, the founder of Pacifica, created a nonprofit foundation, started out in Berkeley, KPFA, where he believed that there should be multiple voices, not limited by their political or ideological or cultural or educational backgrounds. And indeed, so nobody benefits when there's censorship. Nobody benefits if you have someone on the air who you do not like and don't like his opinion or her opinion, let them have their opinion. Because more often than not, people are on the wrong side of an issue will expose that. So right now, Google, Facebook, Twitter, Wikipedia, they're on the wrong side of truth. They're on the wrong side of open and honest debate and forums. We're not. So we're going to provide you with information. And my hope is that you will open your mind to see that there may be information that you are not aware of that gives you a more honest and broad-based and unbiased perspective. So we're going to share that with you. That's our program today. We always start with the latest on health and healing. And according to George Washington University, nutrition and diet have a profound impact on your gut microbiome. Micro, M-I-C-R-O, that means miniature. Bio, B-I-A-L, that's the accumulation of your bacteria and the fact that it has either a very constructive or very destructive outcome depending upon whether you've been feeding it through your liquids and your diet, the kind of nutrients that allows it with prebiotics and probiotics to digest food and to then have its own brain in the gut and stimulate your immune system to a higher level of alertness and protection of your overall body. Because those who have a compromised gut, a toxic gut, they are more susceptible to all diseases, including the coronavirus. Well, in turn, everything that you eat affects a range of metabolic, hormonal, and neurological processes, And according to a very careful review of all the scientists who are working in this field, and there's a lot of them, and this is from the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, and published this article, they say pay attention to what you're eating. But until recently, the human microbiome remained an understudied target of novel strategies to diagnose and treat disease. The prevalence of diseases that may invoke disruption of the gut microbiome are increasing, and there is currently no consensus in the scientific community on what defines a healthy gut. And I believe that's because of personal bias and also because the food industry, and we're talking about the sugar industry and the meat industry, the dairy industry, the refined confection industry, the people that make great pizzas and pretzels and potato chips and french fries, the people who virtually control and have captured virtually all the media and discussion and put forth the so-called experts who all have good backgrounds, good pedigrees, but have accepted money in some form, either research, that's a big pay to play, whoever you give money to is now obligated. Now they'll say, no, it doesn't influence me, but that's nonsense. I've spoken with hundreds of scientists who've told me, yeah, it does make a difference. Yes, you will look at results, and if the industries, the food industry, the pesticide industry, whoever pays for the research is going to have a lot of control over the final report, and all negative outcomes, they're buried. So, yeah, only a very naive person would trust corporatized research. It's grossly flawed. And independent research itself can be flawed. In fact, 67% of all studies are not reproducible. Therefore, they're flawed. So when people are telling us, well, there's no association between what you eat and your bacteria and health, that's nonsense. They're wrong. Because the good science, the independent science, repeatedly shows, yeah, you are impacted in health and disease by what you eat and what you drink. So that's what this tells us. So the takeaway message is you can have a profound effect for positive or negative in what you eat and drink. And the average American drinking colas, drinking beers and alcohol, drinking, you know, mythical vodkas that you can't taste anyhow. And by the way, just as a little example, at my annual New Year's Eve party that I used to have for 30 years, I'd have three groups of people come. Generally, the older ones who wanted to come early, have dinner, have nice conversations, and then leave. The professionals that I dealt with, my publishers and agents and other people, they would come. And they would generally stay up to about midnight to ring in the new year, and then they'd leave. And then people had already been out partying would come, generally around midnight, 1 a.m., stay until early morning, then I'd make everyone breakfast. And my friends and I were in the kitchen pumping out the food all night long. But one day, I realized that in the group who was coming around 9 o'clock, they were all professionals. It just turned out that way. They were all professors, we're talking about heavyweight people in their field, highly respected, and connoisseurs, right? They all pride themselves in being connoisseur of something. So anyhow, downstairs in the building was a liquor store that I lived in over on 86th Street. I went down, I said, what is your cheapest bottle, absolutely the cheapest bottle of gin and vodka and wine and champagne? So he gave me the bottles, and I said, but these aren't cheap. He said, well, no, in this neighborhood, no, nobody would ever buy it. He said, you got to go down to the Bowery. So down to the Bowery I went, got a car, drove down there, went to a store and bought really cheap stuff. I mean, like for $3 to $5 a bottle, and brought it back. But then I went downstairs, and I said, what is your most expensive bottle? But what I'm going to do is this. I'm going to pay you for it, but I'm not going to open it. And tomorrow I'd like to return it. I'm doing a test. Okay. All right. So he said, okay. But if you break that seal, you bought it. Okay. And I said, give me your most expensive. And he said, these are expensive, the very high-end ones. Okay. So I probably put about $1,000. I gave him as a deposit. So I went upstairs. And then I had different glasses all filled. And so what my friend said, who was helping me in the kitchen, Donald, and he was a psychologist, his part of this, he said, oh, by the way, just how you'd like to know, Gary wanted to see what you thought of, you know, the, and I won't mention the brand name, but you've seen it on television, that the celebrities eat, you know, drink, you know, I think it's about $800 to $1,000 a bottle, and this is the champagne, and Rothschild and Vineyards, you know. So by the end of the evening, the cheap stuff was all gone. I bought a lot of it, and the comments were, man, you really know how to throw a party. The wine was the best wine I ever had in my life. The vodka, the best vodka I've ever had. Now, mind you, I don't drink. My friends know that, but I don't tell them what to do. It's their life. And the gin, this is, and then they start describing it. You know, like how people describe wine. What to me, describing wine, anything other than, well, take some socks you've just run a marathon in and put some water over it, and that's wine. Okay, it's not apple juice, it's not orange juice, it's not grape juice, it's not tangerine juice. It's, in my opinion, it's a conditioned taste like eating pig's feet where I come from. Every bar, including one I used to play pool every night in, that's what we did to stay out of trouble, we'd go down and shoot pool. They had huge jars of these pickled pig's feet, you know, with all the gelatin and the crap, and I said, you're eating a pig's foot. Yeah, well, it tastes good. Now, it doesn't taste good. And I didn't eat pizza because it looked like someone had vomited on the, and it smelled like vomit. Be honest. If you really close your eyes and someone vomited and you smelt the vomit and then put the vomit onto a pizza crust, someone would say, this tastes good. No, you're eating vomit. Well, be honest with yourself. We adapt and then create this adaptation. And I mean, the people in Australia eat this very bizarre thing they put on toast that's the most rancid thing. And in Japan, they eat natto. And that's, you know, you might as well go lick a curb. And yet people say these are wonderful things like snails. Yeah, that's nice. But they don't call it. Eat some snail slime. No, escargot. Oh, that's nice. Pate. No, you're eating a duck liver. And escargot. It's like, you know, swallowing snot. I mean, just to be realistic, try to get that out of your mind. So anyhow, at the end of the evening, everybody thought, you know, this was just, oh, above and beyond. And that's all they could talk about. I never told them that they were drinking the cheapest stuff I could find, but their mind interpreted it through their perception that it was the best. And one day and this is how tricked we are by perception. The larger meaning of this story is that if we assume that our meal is a good meal because everyone's eating it, so why go to a farmer's market or a health food store, a food co-op? You know, and you got great food co-ops all over America. You know, High Falls Co-op, and which I helped found, by the way, and first in the eastern United States, and over in Brooklyn you got them. Why go there? Why take the time to look at food and select something that's been fresh and not sprayed, locally grown, harvested the night before that morning, when you can order in and you get a pizza? And not only do you get enough pizza, but you get the crust now has pizza infused in it. Or you get an extra thick crust where they've infused cheese in the crust. And then the next morning when you wake up and you got mucus coming in out of orifice, and you got to have a bucket beside your bed to release all this mucus coming from everywhere, and your eyes are puffy and your breath stinks and your tongue looks like, you know, a wild boar slept the night in your mouth. And yeah, and you get your aches and pains are everywhere. That's from that pizza. But you'll never acknowledge that if you eat pizza or if you eat sugar and suddenly you're buzzing. You're like a cockroach on speed. You're all over the place. You can't control your thoughts because you're in hyper excitable gear. That's what sugar does. the sugar rush. So we have to understand one lesson. If you trust the media, then you're always going to be wrong when it comes to health, because the people who are there as the so-called experts, I found them to be extremely ignorant or biased on this subject, because they don't have a clinical practice like those of us who are in the field and are accredited and do have the references, not only as clinicians, but as scientists, both applied and basic sciences. These are people who will take talking points from Wikipedia or one of the quack sites, which are just spew quackery, by the way. That's the irony. Those who call others quacks are the ultimate quacks. They don't have really good science or clinical experience on their hand, and this is one of those cases where what you hate about yourself, you project upon other people. Wow, that's a lesson we should learn. So then people go forth saying, you don't need all this vegetables and fruits. After all, the cow ate the vegetables, you know, the grains. So if you want to really be a vegan, well, eat meat. Because after all, the cow's out there eating grass, so that's the cleanest meat you can eat. It's range-fed. Now, how dumb is that? But that's the limit of thought and dialogue on this. And people say, yep, I want my cola. Do you know what that's doing? Put a nail in a glass of cola and see what the nail's like a week later. Put a piece of meat with a thermometer at 97 degrees outside for 3 days and spritz some water on it every hour. Would you eat it? What do you think's happening in your gut after 3 days at 97 degrees and moist environment? That's creating toxic bacteria. That's creating very toxic bacteria, which means your immune system is going to be weakened, which means that when you come in contact with any virus, your immune system is not going to be as strong as it should be to protect you. So just the idea that diet nutrition is finally being said has a profound effect on your gut, and your gut has a profound effect upon whether you stay healthy, live a long life, or die young, or die of a disease. And this is not me saying this. This is a peer-reviewed article in Nutrition Review from George Washington University. I wanted to spend extra time just on one topic, because if we don't get the basics right, what good is all the other information after it? In fact, last night I did a lecture. Unfortunately, the battery went out. I didn't know that until I was just told by the cinematographer today that my mic battery was gone. So I'm going to redo my last night lecture on creating balance in your life, and I'm going to focus upon creating health balance and how by having balance, you will slow down the whole process or completely eliminate disease, and you will age much slower than everyone else. And so I'm going to put that up on YouTube tomorrow. It has to go from here up to our editors who then edit it and then put it up on YouTube. And it'll go to all the people who are in our home-based anti-aging study as well. But I talk about how too much salt weakens the immune system. Okay, today, just this morning, University of Bonn, article published in the peer-reviewed journal Science Translational Medicine. Quote, a high salt diet, that's your average diet, every time you eat that fried chicken, and especially the fried chicken, and what better gourmet way of eating it than have two completely sugar-coated donuts as your buns. Who came up with that idea? Why would any human being who has an IQ over 7 think that's a good idea to eat that? It's not good to eat either the donuts, which is a pure refined carbohydrate, and or the fried chicken, which creates all forms of disease, including cancer. But in any case, it's got a lot of salt in it, huge amount of salt. So here's what they say. A high salt diet is not only bad for one's blood pressure, get this, brand new, but also for your immune system. That's the conclusion of a study at the University Hospital Bonn and published. And that's not a lot of salt. That's, well, we're eating about 5 grams or more a day, and that's too much. You need about 800. So we're eating 400% more salt. And that's just, you can get that in one meal, because I went to an old article I wrote, and in one single lunch you can have 5,000 grams or 5,000 milligrams of salt in one meal. So we are way, way over the limit in creating a defective immune system. Now take what the previous article said. So your diet will impact your gut, and that impacts your immune system. Salt impacts your immune system. Two things right there. And there's a lot more, but I don't need to go any further on this. You get the point. All right? That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're here to empower people. All people. Everyone's invited to the table. Okay? We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear some comments on our talkback line from two of our listeners. I don't know who they are, but you're more than welcome to call in and give your opinion on the issues that we're discussing. And right now we're discussing, why is it that seniors are not organizing and demanding that how they're treated and what they need are not being acknowledged by anyone, not by the city, states, federal government, or by the average citizenry? Why have we become so distant from what has historically throughout the world in every culture been essential? Honor and respect people as they get older. And we're not. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Yes, good morning. This call is in reference to Gary Null's question about what's going on with the seniors. I would extend that to what's going on with the world of people. Everyone is degenerating. I personally think that it's in relation to the loss of manners and civility. You can't have civilization without civility and manners and etiquette and definite forms of behavior. People have lost the consciousness of how to act like human beings. So thusly, they act like beasts, not even like animals, because animals have criteria and schematics that they follow and honor. But man has definitely lost the ability to perceive himself as a human being, thus breaking his connection with other human beings and causing the dilemma that we are seeing now. Also, I was reading a book called The Five Elements of Self-Healing by Jason Elias, E-L-I-A-S. And if you would read the introduction, you will see that I think it answers your question perfectly, because it just remarks the same question was asked 5,000 years ago in China. Okay, I think you're doing a wonderful job. Keep up the good work. And until we find in our hearts compassion and consideration for ourselves first, then we can't extend it to anyone else, and the world will continue to spiral out of control into the abyss. Thank you for the question.
Hi, Gary. About the elderly people and how they're aging poorly, I think there's three reasons. Number one is they watch a lot of TV, and it shows them on the pharmaceutical commercials how they're supposed to get all kinds of diabetes and intermittent claudication or whatever, and they just see that as their way of getting older, so it becomes kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. And also, because that leads to the second thing, they're eating toxins. Nobody taught them that the farmers are spraying Roundup on wheat, and that ends up in all their bread. So that, along with glutamate, glyphosate and glutamate are like a double whammy on the brain. They're both neurotoxins. And then the third part, I think, is just that they don't picture themselves as dying of old age. They think that they're going to die in the hospital. And I think if you assume that you're going to die in your own bed, and the last week of your life you're just slowing down and not eating or drinking as much, you actually have control over whether or not you're going to die. So if you think you're not in control, you won't be in control. But if you feel like maybe I have more control over my life than I once assumed, then you can go out peacefully. All right, thank you, Gary. Bye-bye.
First of all, I want to thank those two wonderfully inspired individuals who gave us some really good insights. And the more different insights we have, the more pieces the puzzle of helping people. We can't help solve a problem unless we acknowledge the problem. We won't apply any solution if we're not demanded to. So at least now we're understanding better the problem because you're calling in and sharing your wisdom with us. Thank you very much for that. This is an article posted on PRN.fm. And by the way, every single day we're adding more and more and more. Jesse, who helps manages PRN and runs it, he is adding, with Richard Gale, dozens of articles per day on health and nutrition, all from peer-reviewed journals. And then we're also right now, we're putting up photographs. Initially, I didn't have any from anyone else, so I found one from Luann Panessi and found one from John Q and myself. We just finished the state championship, and we all won gold medals against tough competition as seniors. I want you to see that. But I also showed you some other shots. There's one of me at 25 and me today. Look at the difference. Look at the difference. But I want to see your shots. Now, I want to see, and with a little background, please send, and here's how you send it, please send Jesse a photograph that you would like the world to see and a story about how you're keeping your health or regained your health, because then you and I and all the others who are listening now who care about the choices they make and know there's a consequence, we might be able to inspire other people saying, hey, look at them, look at their age. Well, wow, there's hope for me. And so maybe by doing that, you could help save a life. All right, that's the purpose of it. It has nothing with narcissism or anything else. I mean, this is just a simple reality. You've got at some point show people by example what they can do for them to be inspired. All movements start with one person who steps out of line, walks in the opposite direction of the herd and the consensus, and does something that is so unique that they get our attention, and then we start to think, could I do the same thing? And yeah, the answer is yes, you could, especially if you're aging with diseases and illnesses and memory loss. So here's where you send your photograph and a brief, maybe three paragraphs about how you're living and how you got there. prnstudio@gmail.com. prnstudio@gmail.com. And that's all up to Jesse. I'm running this, I've done four lectures already today. Boy, I found something. Those of us who are on staff went out early this morning to our run and then go to the gym, and then we're available then at 8 o'clock for everyone else to get them into exercising. And I'm working with seniors, and boy, they're a rough group to work with. It's not easy. Oh, they come solidified in their perceptions and their realities. They're not easy to change. Even if they come to a place with the intent of changing, you have to sometimes see which key in the lock of their consciousness is going to open them up to realize there's a greater reality than what they've lived. But they hold on to their biases, prejudices, conditioned responses. So it's, I think back to 1972 when I was doing retreats upstate at the Fertler Farm. The average person coming was a 28-year-old male, 90% of the people. They wanted to learn. And when you're working with younger people who are open, everything flows. Working with young people who are open is like watching Fred Astaire dance. It's smooth. Working with older people, they're rough. I mean, they're really rough. Even when change would save their lives, they've got 16 excuses not to do things. And they got attitudes from hell. That's something you got to be aware of. Not the nicest, not the easiest people to work with. That's just my reality. Might not be yours. So one of the reasons they're not working collectively together and they're not organizing. But in any case, my hope is that they'll finally open up and realize they can be a lot healthier. And since they've all got their blood work up done, they're into it, I'll keep you posted. And most importantly, in 60 days when they get all their tests done and blood done, and again, we'll show you what changed. And the people who change their mind and change their perception will be the ones who change their biochemistry. And those who change but could not change their perception or chose not to, you won't see any change in their biochemistry. That's what we found from the last study. That's a whole interesting long discussion in the article, scientific article for peer review, where we had why does one group of people change with phenomenal results and another group doing the same identical protocol not change? Well, remember I said you could take all the vitamins in the world, you could drink all the juice in the world. It does not mean you're going to benefit from them, because your DNA is controlled by your thoughts and the epigenetic condition thoughts. That's what has to change. So that's what we're working on. I've been doing 5 lectures a day in addition to everything else. So this is an important discussion. Now, I'm not going to be able to get through everything, I do not believe, but I'm going to get through a lot of it. You can read the rest of the article and read health stories and read stories on the coronavirus, including this one, and read stories and look at films on and photographs on nature, because I want people to be inspired by how beautiful nature is, and feel good stories to bring your spirits up. It's all about empowerment. This is called Lessons from the Fear of Coronavirus. And we begin by talking about the worldwide coronavirus pandemic has provided an opportunity for everyone to take stock of their lives and reevaluate their priorities. It is also forcing us to pay attention to the fundamental basics of becoming responsible for our own health. Now, these very basic principles are the same ones that may have saved countless lives in the past from avoidable diseases such as heart disease and stroke and diabetes and cancer and other infectious disease outbreaks. Hopefully, as a people and as a nation, we will emerge wiser and act more proactively in the future from the lessons learned from this crisis. Now, as an aside, one of my longtime friends, every week we would go out to dinner and then go to a movie or play and then walk back from wherever we were, from the village, and have nice conversations. And this person would always kind of laugh when I would take out my wallet, which was an envelope to pay. And I had money in little bundles, you know, like singles, fives, tens, and twenties. And also, every time we went in any restaurant, I would put a linen cloth napkin on my seat and one on the table. And then I would take out my silverware. And I don't drink with the milk because it dilutes your hydrochloric acid. And so I would order, but not salads. And anything that was raw, I wouldn't order. And they thought I was just, oh, well, that's Gary. He's just strange. Okay, so I'm strange. And when I get into a cab, I'd always have or car, I'd always open the door and I put down that little portable cushion seat that you wear, you know, you put in a car. I take it everywhere. I throw it in the laundry at the end of the day and it gets clean. But that's what I would use in a movie theater. And if I would always get extra paper towels at the counter and put down so my arms would be on the armrest but covered with paper towels. And they never did any of this. You know, they'd punch their finger on going down an elevator, and they'd open a door, and then they'd laugh at me. Look, Gary, the bugs are on my hand. I'd say, I'm glad they're on your hand, not mine. You know, then they would, one of them was just, he opened the door and then licked his finger saying, Gary, I'm not going to die tonight. I said, you're probably not. But you just licked 3,000 people in and out of those doors. Everything that was on their hands was on that doorknob. Well, in time, now, guess what? Oh, I guess Gary was ahead of that curve. Just like in the old radio shows, talking about health and nutrition and fiber, and people thought, fiber? What about fiber? Well, it's always better to learn a lesson and be wiser and proactive in the future and forgive the past as intentional neglect or hubris or even arrogance. However, our ability to evolve beyond our limited perceptions of ourselves, and they are very limited, to our biases, to our body politic, to our culture, ethnicity, all of those inputs from earlier in life become ingrained into our conscious and subconscious. So that's why when Bruce Lipton said that about 97 to a maximum of 95% of everything we do, think, and say in a day is coming from our subconscious conditioned self, and only about 3 to 5% comes from our conscious self, he is correct. And others have noted that as well. So we think we're present. Most of the time we're not. Our mind's divided and diverted. So if what we are being told by those in authority is inaccurate or patently false, such as Donald Trump's chloroquine drug is, quote, a gift from God to treat coronavirus infections or prescribe HIV retroviral drugs without clearly stating that these drugs' serious health warnings exist, then the citizens remains in a daze of ignorance and being uninformed. Worse, the nation becomes further deluded. And as we are observing, this leads to panic and fear. Panic, in turn, brings forth its own set of economic and social and personal problems. As we follow the events unfolding both in the United States and globally, it is understandable that the medical community continues to be very perplexed on many issues. It is not a good sign when Oxford University made the decision to cease relying on the World Health Organization's coronavirus data because the consistency in errors throughout the world. Nations' health ministries rely upon the World Health Organization reports to develop their own strategies. Stanford University biochemical data scientist Dr. John Ioannidis recently warned that, quote, we sorely lack reliable evidence on how people have been infected with the SARS-CoV-2 or who continue to become infected. And the data collected so far, quote, this is what he's saying, is utterly unreliable, end quote. Now, many countries, which include the United States, according to him, are consequently adopting, quote, draconian countermeasures to deal with the spread of the virus. He also called the World Health Organization's data, quote, and reported case fatality rates meaningless, end quote. Due to our failure to properly confront the virus, death rates are, quote, buried within the noise of the estimate of deaths from influenza-like illness, end quote. What he's actually saying there is that a lot of the death that you're seeing around the world is actually caused by an influenza virus that is upper respiratory tract, has many of the same symptoms, you know, a high fever and fatigue and coughs, non-productive coughs, and dizziness, many of these same conditions, same symptoms. So did they really do very detailed autopsy reports to identify which specific coronavirus, because it's a whole family of viruses, are involved? The answer is no. But then again, we have not looked at who's really dying, and I will share that with you in a moment. So as a result, he's saying, and he's one of the country's leading authorities on this, that the death rates are meaningless due to our failure to properly confront the virus and in a way that makes sense. So although the coronavirus is a common infection, and there are dozens of strains, there is a novel strain that has only been with us for about 5 months or less. We know it is highly infectious. There is evidence that it may be more contagious via contact with surfaces rather than from airborne particles between persons. For example, the CDC discovered that the COVID-19 viral RNA was found on the surfaces of a cruise ship for 17 days after the passengers departed, and infectious rates appear to be quite erratic. Some countries have been very successful to contain its spread, while others, including Italy, Spain, and the United States, they're not doing very well. Now, during a recent interview, one of our greatest intellectuals, Noam Chomsky, remarked that our nation's infrastructure has taken on, quote, a third world character, end quote. But it is not only our crumbling roads and bridges and our banana republic transportation system that has become a disgrace for a wealthy nation that claims to be exceptional, quote from Chomsky. Our health care is an international scandal. It took our structure to collapse for Chomsky to say, we are unbelievably backwards, end quote. Healthcare workers and nurses are pleading for essential supplies such as effective face masks. The vast majority of face masks there are not doing diddly squat. Homemade ones are even better in some cases, like sweatshirts, because they're a greater barrier for what you're exhaling into the environment and what you're absorbing through. A sweatshirt is much thicker than a t-shirt, but even some strong underwear. I just saw a video where a woman takes a pair of underwear and she puts it one way over her mouth, which covers the whole bottom of her face, including her nose, and then pulls it back over the top so it covers everything but her eyes. Such a neat idea. If you have nothing else and you have to improvise and you come up with a barrier to at least give you some protection. Now, I would go one step further. I would say, now spray colloidal silver on the outside of the mask around your mouth and on the inside. And that will make a big difference. And are you taking your masks and spraying colloidal silver or hydrogen peroxide to soak them down, let them dry? Now you've disinfected them and you can wear them again. Simple things. But what we're happening is there are insufficient chemicals on hand to manufacture enough diagnostic tests. And this is critical to properly monitor the spread of the virus. Unlike other countries, notably South Korea, Taiwan, Singapore, and even China, our healthcare system has been reduced to economy and efficiency. We only produce what we require at the moment and give no forethought towards the future. Prevention has never been one of America's strongest skills. It's one of our weakest. We learned nothing from Hurricane Katrina, nothing from Hurricane Sandy, nothing from the last three hurricanes that have devastated Puerto Rico, much of Florida, North Carolina, Mississippi, Louisiana. We've learned nothing. Nor have people made any changes because insurance is running out. And the ocean tides are coming in higher at night, putting millions of Americans' homes at risk. We've learned nothing. We're not doing anything preventatively, nor are we changing. We're not moving. As if somehow if I close my eyes and close my ears, this will all pass. No, it won't. In the wake of our habitual unpreparedness, and that's intentional for many reasons, numerous people suffer. We never go back. Did you ever notice we've never gone back to Houston when they had 21 trillion gallons of water pour on the city in 5 days and say, how you doing? We haven't gone back. We should have, to see what can we do to help those hundreds of thousands of people, generally poor people, living around the chemical plants, all of which spilled chemicals into the ground, and all of which stayed in the ground or stayed in the air. We're not good at all at cleaning up our mess anywhere. The military-industrial complex mess, the toxic supersites, depleted uranium. So we fail miserably at preventing conditions and being proactive and understanding them for the future. So aside from all the uncertainty and confusion, even among our top health experts, one thing we can feel certain about, those at greatest risk have other pre-existing medical conditions. Let me repeat that. Those who are at greatest risk of the coronavirus or other viruses almost always have pre-existing serious medical conditions. Unfortunately, our health officials have not provided any clear demographic statistics of these who have died in the U.S. so far. What percent had pre-existing health conditions such as cardiovascular or autoimmune illnesses? We don't know. The condition of a person's immune system is critical for fighting any infectious disease, not just the coronavirus. So we checked everyone who tested positive's immune system. No, we haven't. The vitality of the immune system can mean life and death. What I do every day is try to give you insights of how to build the immune system. Why do you think so many people come to retreat, go home and say, wow, I was not aware of how weak my immune system is and how to get it strong and help me live longer and prevent illness? Because that's what one of the things I specialize in, helping people understand what builds the immune system. The vitality of the immune system is essential. By the way, over 99%, 99.2% to be exact, of Italians who died either of the virus or a subsequent co-infection, such as pneumonia, all had pre-existing health conditions. Almost 50% had three or more conditions, the most common being high blood pressure, diabetes, and heart disease. Why aren't those mentioned? Nowhere do you hear that mentioned. The median age of infection is 63 years old, and 79.5, almost 80 years old, is the median for the death rate. Now, mind you, that's longer than the average lifespan of the average Italian, American, and only the Japanese and a few other countries live longer. So now people dying of the coronavirus infection already have lived longer than the normal lifespan of the average person in that country. Now, I'm sure all of you have been or would like to go at some point, and I hope you do, to Italy and the Mediterranean. Wonderful countries, absolutely charming and interesting people, but see how many of them smoke. See how many of them drink, not just wine, but hard liquors. See how many of them don't exercise. See how many of them are stressed because of the failing economy, the corruption, which is endemic in Russia or in Italy at every single level. All that contributes to destroying their immune system and making them susceptible to dying of high blood pressure, diabetes, or heart disease. Now, they would have died of these things, but now they got the virus in their upper respiratory tract, and boom, that's the final straw that tips it. All those who have died under 40 years of age were, quote, males with serious existing medical conditions, end quote. There might be a handful at most of females, but it's all males. Why aren't we told that? That anyone younger dying was sick also. However, in the United States and parts of Europe, the crisis seems to be unfolding differently. Anthony Fauci recently stated during a White House meeting, quote, now we have to look at the young people who are getting seriously ill from the European cohort and make sure that it isn't just driven by that they have underlying conditions, because all bets are off, no matter how young you are, if you have an underlying serious medical condition, end quote. There it is. If you have a serious underlying medical condition, well, we have a pandemic of serious underlying medical conditions. Children in America have more adult diabetes, not childhood diabetes, than any other country per population in the world. We have more obesity in our children, more arthritis in our children, and more heart disease in our children. In fact, this current generation will be the one generation that doesn't live as long as their parents. For example, in both Italy and Spain, where infection rates are inordinately high, approximately 30% of males smoke. In the United States, recent data showed 40% of hospitalized cases are between 20 and 54, and 12% of persons in intensive care are between 20 and 44 years of age. Furthermore, according to the CDC, 78% of Americans over 55 have a chronic condition. 78%? Two-thirds of the American population are deadly sick and should be on death watch? Yeah. 47% have two conditions that could kill them. American children are some of the sickest in the developing world. They are the sickest. 27% had a chronic illness a decade ago, not including obesity. That's of all children. Much of the cause of America's chronically ill children is due to environmental reasons. Many of these conditions would be preventable if we had a satisfactory healthcare system and actually prevented illnesses, but we're not going to do that. We're not going to tell people what they should eat because we're defiant. We eat what we want to eat. That's my choice. And you're right, it is your choice. But it's also your responsibility. For every choice you make, please understand there will be either a positive or negative outcome. So when there's a positive outcome, you take credit for it. When you exercise, when you eat intelligently, when you deal with problems without personalizing everything, when you let go of anger, you let go of vengeance, you let go of violence, you let go of getting even and I'll show them, then you've done something that can help you. But if you're one of these people that personalize everything, make yourself seem a perpetual victim of everyone and everything, then you have created what you fear. The outcome will be what you fear. Do we have any information in junior high, high school, preschool, college, graduate school, or on public television explaining the consequences of our choices? Not any. Not any. Because almost all of our choices are manipulated and propagandized, inserted into our psyche by ad after ad ad nauseum until one day, yeah, you're hungry and you eat a pizza. You don't think twice about it. Everyone else says, can't be that bad. Yeah, it's that bad. Yet we don't die from eating one, you know, hamburger or have cirrhosis of liver from one drink. But you're not going to have one hamburger or one drink. You're not going to think one negative thought or have one emotional outburst. It's going to become chronic until you accept it as normal behavior. And then one day you end up with a heart attack, a stroke. You're 42 years old. You're 36 years old. You're going into dementia at 41. Yeah, that's happening. Because you've been living pedal to the metal, full blast ahead, caution be damned. I'll do what I want to do because I have a right to do it. Arrogance, narcissism, ego, ignorance, and attachment from all that allows us to hold a moment and think, well, what is the likely outcome and consequence? That we're not mature enough yet to focus on. And then we think, ah, everything is the virus. No, it's not. It's a cofactor. So in conclusion, for this part of our study, I'm giving you half today. I'll give you the next half tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'm going to give you what you should do, what you should eat, what supplements, herbals, botanicals you should take and to understand, and also new information on cleaning your surfaces. By the way, clean all surfaces repeatedly. We're finding more people are being affected by the surfaces that are contaminated. The very thing I've spent my adult life trying to avoid and was mocked and laughed at. And that's fine. I didn't take it personally. But that now you should take personally. Tomorrow we continue with part two, Lessons from the Fear of Coronavirus. But we have no fear of heart disease, high blood pressure, obesity, diabetes, arthritis, dementia, Alzheimer's. None at all. Wow. That's a unique kind of indifference, isn't it? I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day. Okay.